Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. We now move on in the halachas of forbidden foods. This is part two of Siman Mem Vav, the 46th chapter in the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch. Today we're going to be looking at the oversight of kashrus products. This is a very fascinating topic, and we're going to look at four basic concepts today. Number one is meat and cheese needing oversight. Number two is oversight in the kitchen. Number three, terminal conditions in meat. And number four, milchik and fleishik bread. Let's take a quick look into these topics. So background for the first one. The first topic is meat and cheese needing oversight. So just to be aware of it, kosher meat, kosher fish, kosher wine, kosher cheese are very expensive products because they require a certain amount of oversight and investment in the production process. As such, that is because they are more expensive, there is a greater incentive for them to be switched out with cheaper non-kosher products and therefore require special oversight. Also because when they are unlabeled, when they are not noted, it is not possible to know if this is kosher meat or not kosher meat, if this is kosher cheese or not kosher cheese. Therefore, a lot of oversight is needed to be had. So a basic way of asking this question is, why is it whenever I go to a restaurant, I order from a restaurant, or I'm on the plane and I get my kosher food, it's always got all those annoying tape and wraps? So the reason is as follows. Fish, meat, and wine, which do not have unique signs on their cuts, meaning to say, it's not a unique cut which proves that this is kosher, which are sent via non-Jewish messengers or even estranged Jews, needs to have two seals on it in order to ascertain that it is not switched. Meaning, I, as the recipient, needs to be able to be taking off two levels of seals. So usually this is done, if you look, think back to your airplane meals, what's happening is you have the plastic cover, and then there is also the hot food. The hot food is usually more of the issue. So the hot food is double wrapped in foil, and there's also usually a circle of tape around it as well. If that's broken, you can't really eat that. You're not allowed to eat that because there's no confirmation that something was not switched in between. That is where it comes from. However, when it comes to bread, mevushal, wine, and cheese, I just need to have one seal, and that's sufficient because those are isurei derabbanan. But by isurei d'oraisa, like fish, meat, and wine, one needs to have two seals in order to be able to use this when it has been in the hands of a non-Jew without oversight. What counts as a seal? So, like the examples the Ketzer gives, like a sack, the stitches need to be facing inward so they can't just be tampered with and resealed. So transpose that to the kashrus world, means it needs to be something which is not something which can just be opened and closed easily. It needs to be something which, if it was open, it would be damaged, and the recipient would be able to see this as well. What if I have an item which is sold by a non-Jew with a seal of sorts, but I don't know who made the seal? That does not help. Meaning, if I receive a sealed product, but I don't know who sealed it, then it's a problem. This comes back to the idea of kashrus agencies. A significant amount of the work done by the kashrus agency is to ensure that, first of all, it's kosher, but then also that the seal is such that the person receiving it knows it is kosher as well, which is why, let's say, when it comes to food services, when a supermarket is receiving the meats, so a huge amount of oversight is necessary for the recipient for processing that it comes from the right plants. They're comparing the invoices of where it's been coming from, and it's matching the amount of product which is coming in and relabeling it and sealing it so that the customers are receiving this in the same way. There's a lot of work that goes into this. People just complain about kashrus. They don't realize the significant amount of work that's necessary to ensure the posterity of this. And this comes down to this very specific sugya, which is called basar shenis alim in ayin, which where you have meat or these types of products which have high stakes and are not recognizable in and of themselves, would be a problem as well. When it comes to this, we're not going to go into this right now, but when it comes to, let's say, fish, we're not going to deal with this right now, but if you go to a fishmonger, a lot of times in the old times, there weren't kosher fishmongers that were so accessible in all these small villages, so you cannot rely on white fish that's been cut, white flesh of a fish, because there is no way to know if that's kosher fish or if it's catfish or any other non-kosher fish. Salmon is different because of the pinkish hue, But when it comes to whitefish, you need to have a skin tag as an example. That'd be another way of telling. But otherwise, other than that, there's no way to tell. You need to be able to see the scales, and then could the whole question about knives, not for now. We look into our next concept, and that is oversight in the kitchen. So if I'm cooking kosher meat, is it all right to cook it next to treif meat? The answer is no. If the pots are both uncovered, there's a very significant concern of splashes, and that cannot be done as well, so that should be avoided. What if can I have a non-Jewish person cooking in my kitchen at home? So the Kitzur says, only if the owner is yotzei v'nichnas, in and out, and keeps checking in. If a person's not checking in, when there is no oversight, there will be problems, guaranteed. And so therefore, it is a problem. Generally speaking, and this is a concern in general, a lot of people have a policy in their house for those who are live-ins or those who are working in their house, to ensure that there's just a zero tolerance. No, you can't cook. You're allowed to use our ingredients, and I can set up the stove, but not to allow cooking, because there are concerns of the mistakes which will inevitably happen. What if there's a person who I don't know about their kashrus? Can I buy food from them? The answer is, if the food is something which could have a kashrus concern, so for meats, cheeses, salads with, there's always bugs issues, fish, bishul akum, I may not buy from them unless I know that they are shomer kashrus. I cannot rely on them as I have ascertained that they're shmiras kashrus, not just if I know they're a good guy. Can I eat by a good guy for Shabbos lunch? The answer is yes, if they're shomer Torah mitzvahs in general, and I have no reason to believe there's a problem, then I may go to them for a lunch. You know, it's an interesting difference over here. If you're going to be eating by them for lunch and you don't know there's any problems, then you can eat by them. But if they are selling food and I'm buying it, it's not enough to know they're a good person and they're Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. I need to know that about their Shmiras Kashrus is impeccable too. Why the difference? So the difference is because, number one, when a person keeps kashrus themselves, they're usually more makpid on their own kashrus than what they're doing for others, ironically. But number two is when money is involved, unfortunately, people make bad decisions. And when one's selling to someone else, one needs to have oversight. There needs to be some degree of oversight to ensure there's no problems over here, because mistakes are made. That's why we have kashrus agencies. This relates not just to caterers, but to people baking in their basements. Those people do need oversight. You can't just rely on that necessarily. And certainly party planners, where are they getting things from? How does this working? They're not necessarily working through one caterer. One needs to know what's going on over here. When there is money involved, you need to have a higher level of oversight when it comes to these things. Is it a problem having a kosher pot or pan in a non-Jewish home? The answer is yes, because anything which could be used for cooking, we have to be concerned, could have been used just by the buy. And for a non-Jewish person, all this kashrus really is completely meaningless. Meaning, I'll just use it quickly and I'll clean it out. They probably won't notice. And from their perspective, it means nothing. It's as arbitrary as jumping up and down and doing six jumping jacks. The kashrus, we can't use this for meat and milk, means nothing. So if there's no oversight and the quants kalim remain there, one has to be careful. Concept number five is terminal conditions in meat. One has to be careful about these things. The Torah prohibits us eating food from an animal, which is in a terminal condition at the time of shchita, which means which is called a treifa, and that's why in regular shchita we check not all of the tens of concerns which could be creating an animal that is in a terminal condition. Usually the lungs are checked. There's certain things which are checked to make sure that the animal's not in a terminal condition. However, there are certain things we have to be careful of. Here's a few examples. So let's say an animal was thrown down before it was shechted. An animal was bound up and it was thrown to the floor and then shechted. That could be a real concern because it could render it to treifa. That fall could have injured it fatally. And now I'm shechting a mortally injured animal. So if, let's say, this does happen, one can only eat that animal if the animal got up and was able to walk without a problem for 4 amos after that fall as well. But this has to be careful, which means to say that besides for just the basic concern of tzar balei chayim, there could be a kashrus concern as well in such situations. What are other ways this comes up in? So during the summers, there are sometimes blisters in the intestines of ducks, which the Kitzur notes, and these could be terminal problems, which are not part of the regular treifas, but we need to be checked as well. What if chickens were neutered? Is that a problem? So just a quick footnote over here. Jews are not allowed to neuter their or castrate their animals. That's a Torah prohibition. But we're talking about, let's say it's a non-Jewish chicken farm which has castrated their chickens. So we can assume that if they castrated them, it was done professionally and it did not affect their long-term mortality rate. But if there is a reason to be concerned, the animal's limping, the animal's not acting normally, then one should be concerned about consuming such a meat because maybe the castration led to a problem with its actual health as well. Birds which have their wings punctured. So sometimes people puncture, listen to this, they puncture the wings of the birds in order to create swelling. So at the time they're selling it, the birds look fatter than they are. Terrible, terrible thing. That's what sometimes people do. So this is a concern. It may be a concern for mortal injury. The puncturing may have punctured an internal organ as well. And therefore one needs to ask a shayla about such chickens. Large animals which have been overfed, and the way that it's sometimes dealt with close to towards the end is they will take an awl and puncture the stomach to release pressure. That is a real shayla, and a shayla needs to be asked. These are things that happen, but a person needs to be aware of as well. There used to be a method of preserving fruit, which people used to take the womb of an animal and cover the container and put in the oven, and that would preserve the fruit in the container. If such a practice was done, it needs to be clear that the womb ka'e comes from a kosher animal, which was shechted, and also that it was salted correctly to remove the blood. So generally speaking, not as necessary today, but something to be aware of as well. Our last concept today is milchik and fleshik bread. We know that bread is something which is eaten both at fleshik and milchik meals, and as such, there is a gezeira, there's a prohibition of making bread which is either fleshik or milchik. This is usually more of a concern on the milchik side, because generally speaking, people are making bread usually more with milk products than they are making them with meat oil. So what happens if I made the bread with milk by mistake? So the halacha is one may not eat that bread alone or with milk. That means to say there is a prohibition. This prohibition exists independently and it cannot be eaten. Are there any exceptions? So the bread is small enough to be eaten in one serving, or if it is different that in appearance, then it is fine. What's an example of this? So let's say muffins. Muffins can be milkic because they are not in the shape of bread. English muffins is the classic example. What about for meat? So yes, I'm not allowed to make fleshik bread as well. What happens if I was baking bread in a pan with meat near it and the oil from the meat leaked and got absorbed in the bread? So then this is considered milk fleshik bread and I'm not allowed to eat it. What if the bread was baked in the oven with meat, but there was no spill? So it's just in the same oven as the meat. So it depends. If it was, if the meat was open and the bread was open, and it was in a small unventilated oven, then the bread is considered fleshik. But since it's aroma, not an actual touch of the actual physical meat, it can be eaten alone or with meat, but it cannot be eaten with milk. But if it was in an open, let's say the meat was covered and it was in a large oven and there's ventilation, then there's not an issue, but it should not be done, obviously, lechatchila, a priori. What if my oven has a spill from meat or milk at the bottom? So now I want to use it for bread later. Am I allowed to use it? The answer is no. You have to do what's called a libun gomer, which means if there was a spill, you need to do a burnout in order to be able to keep that oven parov sufficiently to be able to make bread in it. A lot of interesting and complicated halachas. A lot relates to the kashrus industry. With this, we conclude our second section of forbidden foods. Have a wonderful and meaningful